Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're going to be talking team news because we can talk team news. We got notes from the practices over the weekend that Eric dropped, so that is very exciting. But y'all know you can read over at InsideTexas.com. You can get all those notes the second they drop, as well as all recruiting stuff, any guys that we're trying to shore up to end the class. Also, 2027 is pretty exciting. If you want to get a good read on the upcoming class, we're covering a ton of that. So come check it out, guys. Right now, you can get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. And as a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. So come join InsideTexas.com, guys. You will not regret it. Another thing you won't regret is buying Paul's book. It's incredible. 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. Buy Thinking Texas Football today. All the links are in the description. If you want the physical copy, the digital copy, all of that, just click the description. You'll see it there. Get it, and you will be a smarter fan because of it. Hey, guys. How was your weekend?
Good. It was nice to be back in Texas and, be productive, but also relax a little bit and settle in. And now we've got a massive storm that rolled in out of nowhere. So hopefully my internet stays on.
Yeah. Wonderful. Coach?
It was a good weekend, man. Gearing up for school, right? It's uniform time. It's all this extra stuff. But, yeah, we got hit with that same storm this morning, man. I don't know where it came from, but I'm glad I got internet right now.
Where? You're in the DFW with me. We didn't get hit in Denton.
Yeah, like an hour away, man, in Denton.
I guess, yeah, but it's just like, I'll take y'all's words for it. Eric's down south, but I didn't expect you to say that. Yeah, good morning, Roaster. Good notes this morning, Eric. I agree. I texted him to tell him. That's nice. Morning, AR. Good morning, Jason. We appreciate the info as well. Eric gets it done. All right. We got a – Brett Nelson already has a thing he wants us to do. We'll do that later in the show.
Hello, Brett.
He wants to rank the last three teams, but we got to talk about this team, guys. This team. This is where we have notes. Okay, so these are the notes after practice three, and then after that we're going to talk the most recent notes from this morning. But we just want to make sure we're not missing anything so we can all be obsessive and read into things too much. All right. The star position. And we'll have some more in the updated notes here, but we've heard some interesting stuff. So Wardell Mack has been there. Grayson Littleton, who we've heard a ton about. And also Taft getting reps there. And that's looking more concrete than I even thought with the latest notes. But we'll kind of what's up with star, dude?
Yeah, you know, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to Taft getting reps there when it was mentioned, you know, right at when the coaches' availability happened with all the coaches. Because we knew that they were trying pretty much everybody there. But the last couple practices, he's played star a lot. He's still at safety as well. You know, they love Littleton, but it seems like they're going to play somebody with more experience there against Ohio State.
Sure.
Taft can do it. Like I posted here, he made his name in the program. Everybody started realizing he wasn't the typical walk-on when they had him at star. So you wonder, does he have the man coverage skills? I think he does have the short area quickness, certainly the intelligence. He's going to diagnose the route pretty much coming out of the huddle. So that's going to help him cover anybody, you know, quite a bit. But, he can do it. Now it's just about a matter of, getting the best five out there and where they fit. So, you know, obviously Taft is one of the best five. Jelani McDonald is one of the best five. And Derek Williams, he's coming along. So we'll see if he's one of the best five. That could really decide what happens.
Yeah, so what's been going on? Derek is running second team right now from the availabilities. Is that what's going on?
When Taft goes to star, Derek is the first safety in to play with Jelani.
Okay.
So that could, you know, I don't know, maybe he's a 1B. Obviously Taft and – if you're just going by safety, it would be Taft and Jelani based on how it is right now. But if one of those two guys goes to star, which is, you know, a strong possibility, then Williams is the first one in. But also, you know, Jordan Johnson-Rebell is rotating a lot. Xavier Filsimi, they've got some positions where a lot of guys rotate with the ones. Running back is one of them. Safety is another.
And that's just kind of coming back, you think, getting into full swing from the knee?
Yeah. I've heard people have different opinions on whether or not he's going to be, you know, a starter for the first game. And I think that could kind of decide what happens with star as well. I think he's ahead of schedule. I think he's doing fine. I haven't heard anything about him having any hiccups, but I haven't really heard about him being, you know, the guy that we saw playing against OU either.
I was going to say, I was like, against OU, man, that was a starter right there. So
yeah, no doubt.
We'll hit this real quick because we have updates. It's really, this is old news now. Wingo and Campbell weren't out a couple of the practices. They're back at practice.
No, they're not back at – I mean, they might be attending practice, but they're not participating in practice. We expect them back today. They're practicing right now. What is it, 9:30? Practice?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Practice is almost over. They started at 8. We heard that they'd be back today, but obviously the next time I get somebody on the phone here, you know, in the next few hours, hopefully, I'll get confirmation that they did return.
Cool. Baxter's turning heads. To me, when I was watching some of the clips, he's still not as quick as he was. And I think that's just injury things. He's also way bigger.
It has to be relative to that. He's carrying at least 10 more pounds.
He's like 30 or whatever.
He's not 100%, but he is ahead of schedule. And, you know, like I posted this morning, Trey Wisner's already dinged up. So Baxter's getting even more reps. Jared Gibson looked really good too. But I think they have four guys capable of starting, and I would include Baxter. Now, maybe I should say Baxter's capable of starting after Ohio State, but not during that September run where you don't really need him. They should keep his carry count pretty low during September. But he looks good relative to his size and relative to coming back from a serious knee injury. It wasn't a run-of-the-mill ACL. So I would say he's ahead of schedule, but not 100%. We were saying 90% during the offseason. He's not going to – and you can't compare him to the other guys in the room either because he's way different than everybody else. You know, nobody runs downhill like Christian Clark to me. But you know, Baxter's 25 pounds more than Christian Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to have a factor on anything for Campbell and Wingo.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I guess it's kind of out there. Dehydration, whatever. It's not. They're just being extra precautious. Making sure the doctors sign off on everything, and you know,
So it's not something to worry about that you need to stress on. They'll be back in action, and it'll be all good. Would September be the month where we could see more Christian Clark?
I expect to see a lot of him. Now, of course, he's coming back from a pretty serious injury as well. I think September is where Jared Gibson's going to make a lot of hay, I expect to see some James Simon and Ricky Stewart during September too. They like both of them. James Simon had a really good practice on Saturday, and he looked good. He looked good in workouts as well when we saw him. So I think they're going to play all six of those running backs in September. But you know, the lower on the totem pole, probably the more you're going to see them outside of probably the first quarters.
Yeah, Baxter still has on that huge mechanical knee brace, the kind that offensive line guys use. I don't know. If they rush him back in too early, what happens if he gets re-injured? I think that's what they're cognizant of.
He's wearing a very cumbersome knee brace. It's not a sleeve or anything. It's a full-on knee brace, and I think that's probably explaining some of his running issues. I think he's running very well, all things considered. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. We've heard that they think that he could play against Ohio State. You remember all offseason I was short selling him having a big impact early in the year. And that's, you know, kind of what the word was behind the scene, and Sark kind of said the same thing. So we'll see how they want to bring him along, but you know, he's practicing a lot, and you know, it's August 3rd, August 4th, and he's practicing a lot already. So, you know, it seems like he already has a heavier workload than you would expect if they were going to bring him along really slowly in September. Now, does he only get 5-6 carries? Is it short yards against Ohio State? I don't know. Remains to be seen. But he's ahead of schedule. That's the most important part. And then Sark will manage it from there.
Yeah. And he's leading team meetings and stuff like that. So
many other intangibles that he brings to the table, man.
Yeah. So
Sark has always had a sweet spot for him. So, and you know, this coming back from this adversity is only going to make that spot sweeter. So, I think he's going to play versus Ohio State. That's my assumption. We'll know game week. We'll have a clear idea. You know, rep allocation will tell us pretty much who's going to play and how much. But, you know, I think it's an exciting development. I was super hyped up when I found out in June that he was already back. I was not expecting that. I thought the first couple practices would be his return. So all excitement about CJ, but, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. It's a deep group, a much deeper group than last year.
Cool. All right, and then LaFalle we'll talk about in the next notes. He's this multiple times he's been mentioned, but I want to talk about the quarterbacks. So Trey Owens had one of his best practices ever. So what's going on there? I know fans are rearing to get see Owens.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I do know that for him to hit the field, he's going to have to be accurate and process quick. And he had a really good practice Saturday. during the scrimmage portion. Was just really on point. Seemed very comfortable. And you know, he's been good in 7-on-7, but you kind of expect him to excel in that situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's, you know, when Sark brought in Caldwell, he challenged Owens and Lacey. Hey, look, go fight for that backup job. And Owens is certainly doing that.
I'd be like, Coach, come on, man. That's not – you don't got to sick everyone on me like that. They already know.
Yeah. Come on, man.
I love that, though. Yeah, don't back down, Trey. There you go. Go fight for your job.
I will say this. Trey Owens will be the last quarterback Sark ever takes that doesn't really truly threaten the defense with his legs. Now, Trey can get out and scramble for a first down when he needs to, but from here going out, like the they're going to be dual threats, whether or not the networks are smart enough to classify them as such. But they're going to be able to run.
So is our boy Sark, he's come around, man? He's a quarterback running man now?
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not going to go for, you know, Randall Cunningham, but it's going to be they're going to have wheels for sure.
And you just have to, man, in the modern
look at the targets.
You just have to, man. Like,
yeah.
They have to have functional mobility at a minimum.
They're going to be as athletic as Arch, Dia, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Those guys are athletic. That's the perfect thing, right? The quarterback that can do all the pocket stuff but still go pick you up third downs or Arch run for 40. Yeah.
Or Kavian Bryant in 2027. That's exactly. He's a real dual threat. But
yeah.
Now, it used to be when they called somebody a dual threat, it meant they just couldn't throw.
Correct. Yeah. And it's also kind of getting rid of the moniker is kind of just, like you said, it's fading out, you know, because it's becoming a requirement for all quarterbacks to be able to move.
Right
now, so it's like the even saying someone's a pro versus that pro quarterbacks can run too. So it's like we need to rethink the classification because it made sense in the past. It doesn't really make sense in modern football to say this guy's pro style or this guy's a runner when pros runs. All right, cool, man. Let's get on to the latest batch of notes. But first, guys, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right, who's ready?
I'm open.
Your girl's got uniforms, Coach, but that doesn't mean you can't accessorize, right? Or maybe it does. I don't know how it works.
That's away from that one. I let mom do it.
Never had to do uniforms, luckily.
My kids beat me up for Nike basketball shoes. I haven't priced those in a long time. I guess we'll have to go up to Academy and see what's up.
That's gonna be the fun part where he gets influenced by kids at school. Like there's the Jordan phase. I was making my parents buy Jordans and they were like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I messed up. He came home talking about LeBron and we got him out. This is a Michael Jordan household, son. And now it's like, oh, right, well, get me a Jordan jersey. I'm like, oh, shit. All right.
Yeah. Well, once you go to that point. Or I remember when Under Armour came out, I was in middle school and like, dude, you had to have Under Armour. Of course, my mom would be like, there's a shirt like this for half the price. I was like, doesn't matter, mom. It has to be Under Armour.
It has to be Under Armour.
I'm not cool anymore, mom. All right. So these are the notes that Eric dropped just this morning. So these are fresh, guys.
Well, now they're already old. I mean, there's actually information to be had from this practice right now. People are going to be like, wait, where's the next update? But, yeah, this is as new as we have right here.
Yes. And then we have the practice that's ending right now that we'll have notes on later. Here we go. Arch Manning, guys. Really well-known player. We're familiar with him. How's he looking, though, man? Like, how's he processing? And we're hearing good things there.
Well, I asked for a note just on each position, so I didn't ask about Arch. You know, just say what stood out from the most recent practice, and, you know, just let the sources freestyle from there. So it's good to hear. You know, you want to hear about Arch as much as possible without actually, you know, asking, soliciting the information, right? Because then you just, you know, you
might – open-ended questions.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, they were working from 25-yard line and in, and he's making good decisions with it. Decision-making going to the right receiver based on what the secondary is showing him. Now, you know, he's going to be quite familiar probably with the secondary based on going through spring with these coaches, the new DB coaches and all that. But he looks good. And a constant theme this entire offseason has been him protecting the football, which goes a little bit against some of his gunslinger mentality. I don't know how many 50-50 balls he threw up against ULM. It seemed like everything was 50-50. But he's doing a good job protecting the ball. We know all the other the talents there. If he takes care of the ball and still retains his playmaking ability, it's going to have a massive season.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen a few clips where he's under center a lot, so he's turning his back to the defense. Talk about trust factor in your quarterback, man. Turn around and make that decision. It's going to be dangerous from under center. I'm glad we added that to the offense, though.
It's great for the offense. It's also scary when the defense disguises, right? So you turn your back a lot and they switch on you. So that's why hearing that he has good command and decision making is going to be really important. But yeah, under center is a lot of fun, man. And then also important, right? 25 yards in. So we're talking red zone.
Yeah.
And so being able to pass and find matchups and limited space in the red zone is going to be absolutely huge for this offense. Like if our red zone offense was top 30 both years, we probably win the national championship.
Agreed.
Like, so that's kind of what's wild. So hearing that is also really big for me. Not that just he's making cool throws, but he's getting it.
If Sark is right in his assessment that he's made behind the scenes that dual threat quarterbacks correlate highly to red zone efficiency, then you're going to see Arch pick up a handful of touchdowns this year on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. If he can pass well and we have the ability to pull, that's going to be tough on defenses, man. All right. Emmett Mosley, good, savvy route runner, all the good buzzwords. He's gotten looks in the slot recently, which is interesting because that's a sure-handed spot. It can either be a fast little demon or it can just be a sure-handed guy, so that's interesting. More pre-snap movement. I thought we already maxed out on pre-snap movement.
They're moving these guys all over. That's how I had to like, are you sure he's in the slot or was a pre-snap or is he lining up there? He's like, man, they're doing a lot of pre-snap. It's as much as ever, if not more. And so it's kind of hard to keep track. But, yeah, he has worked from the slot some, and that's kind of – you know, we kind of expected that when they brought him in. I thought he would go to the slot, Moore would go outside, Moore's got better long speed. But Parker Livingston's making that one a tough one there on the catch. Because, you know, you see that smart, savvy route runner, and that you thought that was going to be Parker Livingston, didn't you guys? Mosley's going to be good. One of those guys, one of Mosley Livingston's going to be their third wide receiver. The other guy will be the fourth. I think Livingston gives them more playmaking, but there's a lot of things that Mosley does that shows up on coaches tape more than maybe on the highlight reel that I think they like. And I think Livingston can bring that too, but maybe he's got to do it a little bit over time. But you know, I like what I'm hearing about the wide receivers absent Ryan Wingo. Now Wingo has to come in and have a really good August because they need that guy game one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm missing parts of the spring. It's just, man, we need Wingo there and locked in. It's going to be tricky. Any media availability for the rest of the fall?
Not as far as watching practice, but you don't need that if you're on Inside Texas. Yeah. I mean, we learn a lot more about scrimmage, and they never let us watch scrimmage. So, that, you know, we get 20 minutes of warm-ups, you know, 20 minutes of on-air. And if we're lucky, we get 20 more minutes of random special teams stuff. But the real information happens during the closed portions, and that's what you're reading about right now.
Yeah, they shield that purposely. Really, when you're doing the media availability, you're like, that guy looks big. That guy gained weight. It's more of like an athlete eval of just looks good.
Yep.
That kind of thing. With the additional shifts in motion installed in practice, has there been any pre-snap penalties called on the offense?
Well, I haven't heard about penalties. I don't know. That's going to be a tough one to get information on. Yeah, we'll hear about it during when they have their proper scrimmages. We might hear something about that. But, man, so much happens in games that affects the penalties that don't affect it in practice. That big stage, that clock winding down, it's just a whole different – the pressure's different. The defense is doing things that you're not familiar with. That might get you jumping and out of – you know, not remembering snap count. So we haven't heard anything yet, but – penalties have been an issue in the past. There's no doubt about that. They had way too many penalties, and not just Cam Williams last year on the offensive line.
Oh, man.
But I haven't heard of any yet. I haven't really asked, though. We haven't had enough. There's not enough sample size to even get an idea on penalties.
I spent a couple hours researching that AR to try to make sure it's true. So teams with additional shifts and motions and motion more, they do get penalized more.
Yeah.
The flip side is teams with more motions and – pre-snap score more, so it ends up balancing out as well. So there is a correlation, though. The more there's just more variables behind the line, and also there's more time before the ball is snapped with these teams, more times to make a mistake.
I was thinking about that on the treadmill this morning, actually, and I'm Sark is sitting there. He'll take that trade off. And I think it wouldn't even be scoring more, which obviously is true. I bet they score bigger plays because of more coverage busts.
Yep. And just like great matchup hunting.
Yep.
I don't think they bring refs out probably until this coming week, though, right?
They did have refs out there when we were there.
Oh, they did? Oh, wow.
They were checking to make sure the balls were being caught in bounds. So I imagine the refs were staying there to do scrimmage stuff. Yeah, they already had them in. So maybe
they had a schedule.
Are they legit? Like when they're at practices, are they kind of going easy because they're there at their request? Like, are they really calling stuff in those practices?
They actually call things.
When they were throwing sideline passes, those guys were running down the line, looking at each other in the eyes, nodding yes, nodding or going no, calling it.
They're getting reps.
They were getting reps, man. And they're like, hey, we're at the University of Texas. You know, normally those guys might be at who knows, you know, some Mary Harden Baylor or something. You know, this is a good time for them. So
They know if they mess around, the bottles are coming out, dude. So they can't play around, dude.
Oh man,
they know we'll change that quick. Still. Top five Texas moment of all time, baby. Tight end, Jack Injuries. He is the guy. He catches everything, and he's a smart player. That's what I've been saying, guys. And to Paul Wadlington's total dismay, probably in tears right now, he's more athletic than Gunnar Helm. Did you hear that, Paul?
I think that showed up on tape. Now, you know, when Gunnar was having his breakout games, I was still like, yeah, you know, I'm thinking fourth, fifth rounder just because. And I don't know, Charlie's a Helm truther. And I like Helm. I expected Helm to be good based on high school evaluation. I liked Helm. But I think Andrews is a bit different athlete. He's routing guys up more like a wide receiver, as it says here. Not exactly like a wide receiver, but he's able to win with route running, whereas Helm won on a lot of really good calls.
True.
Yeah. And also, you take a route runner with Sark handing you 30-yard gains wide open. Now you're in big trouble.
There's a couple highlights that he had. I started imagining when I would see Helm in the open field, like if it was injuries and it's going to be 6 instead of 30.
30, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul has a different read on it. I don't know why, but he does. So I'm excited about that. But 90% catch rate last year, that's massive. And earlier notes where Arch was finding him early. Mm-hmm. He was work. He came in and, you know, took a leadership role as a new guy. So all this stuff you want for a quarterback to think about you, that you have sure hands, that you're in the right spot, that you can win one-on-one. Right. These are all like big third down moments that you're going to end up looking for injuries. So
yeah, that's just about him and Arch being on the same page. You got to have mental telepathy to pull off that. They've been expediting that relationship. Like I said, I don't think it was a coincidence that Andrews got the very first team target of the season when they were going against Scout. We were able to see that. He looks good. I guess I'm going to have to learn more about Paul's read on it. I have not read his book yet. I usually cram that the last week before the season. So I'm going to have to.
He's more of a zone finder and not a big run after catch guy.
Okay. Man.
Yeah, look at the Miami game versus Cal. He took like the little fake bubble screen and took it to the house and left the DB in the dust.
Paul spent so much time in the Bay Area. He must have been a Stanford guy over Cal. That must have been the thing.
You know it. All right. Stowers is only tight end I would take over injuries. Man, Stowers, injuries, Max Clair at Ohio State. I mean, there's a group of these really good tight ends nationwide. Pick your poison, man. And also pick your scheme maximization. It's not a coincidence that Max Clair at Ohio State's a scheme fit, injuries at Texas, scheme fit. Stowers is a big focus at Vanderbilt. So you see these guys that are also in these systems that maximize their abilities to really get all the juice out.
Clair looked pretty special to me when I was watching his Purdue tape when Texas was looking at him. I was heartbroken to learn he was from Ohio.
He's going to be a pain over the middle, man. They're using him basically to make up for like Abuka's absence, which is interesting. Jared Gibson, we talked about this a little bit. Eric mentioned it. Had a good day. James Simon, the freshman, has a great future. And Eric mentioned Trey Weiser a little bit dinged up, so they have him on a pitch count. So they're just going to keep cycling this room, man. They're just going to figure it out, I guess.
Yeah, they've got four guys that are capable of being starters this year. Gibson, hey, you know, I was a lot of times I'm wrong, but only because I'm early. I anticipated Gibson having a big spring, and we heard much more about Wisner and Clark. And even though Gibson did have a good spring, But now he's coming along. Sark mentioned he had a really good summer. Don't count him out. He's got a really good he can run inside, which is what the coaches truly want. He tends to bounce out a little bit, or he was last year bouncing out a little bit more, but he runs with a lot of power, compact build. They need somebody that can break tackles. They got to break tackles. I think that's going to be especially important this year, especially if the offensive line is just average. They're going to need some guys that get above for what it's blocked.
Don't say just average, dude. Don't do that.
I'm hoping it's better than average. Coming up right next, right?
Yeah, I was going to say good thing. Yeah. Offensive line, Brandon Baker is getting more comfortable by the day. That's an important note, and Eric even says it's important. So coaches are getting more trust in him. He can be pretty good this year.
Yeah, the guy kind of told me, he's like, you know, it's not going to be like Goosby coming in last year, but he could surprise people, and that Goosby surprised people that weren't too familiar with him. Like, they think that Baker's going to play a little bit better than what the expectations are. We'll see. There's still a lot of camp left for him too, so that's good. Obviously, he's on a crash course, getting ready to start. He's 100% in. He's always been a hard worker.
He's been a hard worker. That's what I worry about when we're like, you know, not knowing the schemes great makes me.
We've always heard good things about his work ethic.
Okay, good. That's great.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about it, and you know, I love the high school tape. Loved it. So. I'm just surprised that sources have not been a little bit more effusive in their praise of him. And not that they really say anything negative. It's just, you know, you can kind of infer, you know, when they're talking about somebody different, like when we were hearing about Goosby for so long. We usually have a pretty good idea. So right now, if we're hearing above pretty good, above average, maybe just a little, we'll take that all day long.
Yeah. Also helps you got somebody pushing him along the way, right? I guess you got the and or. At the beginning, before fall camp started, Cujo behind him, but it's kind of like you got somebody that's going to push you, but he better show up every single day. So I think, you know, maybe the light bulbs came on a little early for Baker. He understands, all right, this is my job, but I got to own it. I got to take complete control of it.
Yeah, and he's got edges trying to kick the crap out of him.
That's hard. Play. You're lucky.
He's going up against a bunch of NFL guys.
So we'll talk about iron sharpening iron in a little bit, but I wanted to ask you guys, Coach, from a coaching perspective, Eric, from all your experience. So what I've noticed, for instance, right, like if you're talking about a Lincoln Riley offense, it's offensive coach, and he's really geared towards basically setting the offense up for success in practice, and I think that hurts the defense, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that. And Ian mentioned on Thursday's show, but I want to explore it. When you're facing this caliber of edges, and sometimes you're going against scout, I get it. You're not always ones versus ones. Is that beneficial to a young guy's development to have to face Colin Simmons all the time? Or do you want something a little bit slower speed? What do y'all think?
Man, it's man versus man. Like, you got to step up. Like, look, Colin Simmons is probably going to win most of those battles, but he's going to make you so much better. Like, you should want that. I've heard kids in the past say, I want to go somewhere I can be pushed and compete versus the best. You hear about the great teams. Man, the great Miami team say, hey, some of the toughest battles were versus my teammates, but it made them better, made them champions. So there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's growth. As long as the kid doesn't lose his confidence over time, right? Which I don't think they will, because you look at the mental makeup of most of these players, they want to fight, they want to compete. So I have no problem with it whatsoever. I think it makes everybody better across the board.
Well, I think it's especially important given that he has no real game experience. So he's going to have to, you know, what's game speed? Well, this isn't typical game speed. It's Colin Simmons. You're getting a little extra dose, but it's going to be like taking the donut off the bat. You know, and he's over there in the circle taking swings with a heavy-ass bat right now with Colin Simmons across from him. When he goes up against, even Ohio State, is going to be an easier challenge given the losses that they had on the defensive line than what he's going up against in practice every day. And he's going up against a bunch of different types of guys. Yeah. He might have Colin one play who wins one way, and then you've got Zena Umizulu the next that wins another way. Could have Colton Wathick, Ethan Burke that are winning different ways as well. So he's getting the full gamut right now.
For sure. Give him the Jackson Arnold treatment, make things easy on him. That's the other side of the coin, right, where coaches might tip the scales the other way if your guy's totally lost confidence.
It's finally coming.
So it's like that's the fun part. And with practice stuff, I mean, y'all know, sometimes they're gearing that practice for the offense to win. Sometimes they're gearing that practice for the defense to win, you know? So sometimes if you hear X guy got beat.
They were doing that last year. They were trying to get Quinn's confidence back in practice, and then they tried to do it the entire Vanderbilt game when he threw nothing but high percentage passes. And I think over time, it worked. I think over time, his confidence came back, and he was able – yeah, he was playing hurt. That's true. But he was able to – he played with a lot more confidence – after that, you know, confidence crusher against Georgia, October 19th, I think I'm always going to remember that stupid day.
I was going to say, you said it like it was a historical event. Yeah. It was for us. It was.
Yeah. Hey, Homer, I wrote about this the past week, the cheat sheet in practice. Like every single night before the next practice, the offense gets their script and they give it to the defensive guys. So they know what personnel they're going to be in. So so many defensive players start to learn the plays of what they're going to run the next day, right? So they got a kind of a cheat sheet. What I want to hear about is like in the scrimmages part where it's more, it's not so much on the script. You got to kind of figure it out and you can kind of see what guys are really stepping up. So the defense always has a bit of an edge because they get the cheat sheet every morning, man, on the script of what's going to be called.
Yeah. What do you do by the end of camp where the DBs know all the route patterns? You just got to execute better at that point. Like they know what's coming, you know?
Well, there will be some scrimmages where you could tell that Sark just went with a whole different script and changed it up. And we'll hear about the defense struggles. And then there will probably be a scrimmage. So if offense comes out, it'll probably be the defense that does better in the first scrimmage.
Yeah.
That second scrimmage, I expect Sark to show a bunch of stuff that he hasn't showed yet, and we'll hear about the offense doing better. That's typically what happens. And then the defense will come back the third scrimmage, calls, and then that's going to be like the closest thing in the game setting that they'll have.
Yeah. When you're fans reading this stuff, be aware that these practices are engineered. You know, they want to see certain looks. They want to do certain things. So you hear the defense got cooked. There might have been a little bit of a
– Whenever we cover a scrimmage, we always write what the setting was. You know, was it ones versus ones or was it ones versus twos? Yeah. Were they working primarily on red zone? Were they working on third and long? You know, the situation is always going to be important. But the best is when it's one-on-one and you know that they're pulling blitzes that the offense hasn't seen yet. The offense is running looks that the defense hasn't seen yet. Really stuff that they're going to run this season. And then you can get your best barometer.
Yeah, Charlie, you coached offense, huh? You sounded upset about that cheat sheet.
Yeah. Odom and his boys gave us so much crap during fall camp, man. We just wanted to we looked forward to that day where we didn't give them the script and fly, all right, now defend us. Let's see if we're that good. You know what I mean? So, yeah, yes, Justin Wells, yes.
Will media be allowed in the scrimmages?
No, they keep that closed doors. That's the whole value of Inside Texas. I want it all closed off. We got the best information on the team going back 15 years. So that's – you got to come to us. There wasn't a spring game, but my readers got a spring scrimmage report. They had a spring game. We just weren't invited. Nobody was invited.
Yeah. Secretive.
Yeah. And we obviously we leave a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. We don't, you know, we use it to edify. We use it to tell us, you know, hey, you know, I can't write this Ian, but I'll get, you know, what they're doing to Ian. And then Ian will kind of draw it out and let us know what to expect. And not a lot of surprises. There's always a surprise though. They're going to be deficient in some phase of the game that we have no idea. We can't learn about in practice. It's going to be exposed by the season. What that is, I haven't a clue.
Yeah. All right, let's go to defense then. Edge. Actually, before we do that, guys, because this is a very natural break, let's hear a word from our sponsor, the one and only Andre the Lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Y'all heard it here first, man. Millions for his clients. If you think you got done wrong, hit up Andre. All right, guys. Edge, Ethan Burke and Colin Simmons are obviously the starters, but Zena Umiazulu has highest motor. He plays hard, which is crazy because Colin Simmons has an insane motor.
Yeah, he does.
So hearing that was also nuts, and he's gained a ton of weight. I remember watching him at an Under Armour camp before he committed doing drills, and I was like, man, he looks a little skinny. Nope, not anymore, boys. So he's going to clearly get a lot in the rotation. We've been hearing from the practice notes, and he's at the buck, the pass rushing spot.
Yeah. Well, he always had a thick neck. You could kind of tell where he was going. This is going to take it hasn't even taken that long. He's only, a redshirt freshman.
Yep. Yeah.
The key to me, the takeaway from him when he was being evaluated in high school and recruited, you know, my question for sources at Texas was, you know, is he physical? And they're like, he's physical enough. what I'm hearing about now is that it's probably has to do with that added strength, that added weight, is that he's turning into a pretty dang physical player. And then, of course, motor affects that too. The harder you play, the more physical you are just naturally. So I love what I'm hearing from him. I don't know what they're going to do at edge because they're just Brad Smith there as well. So they've got three Bucks that need to play. They've got probably three Jacks that need to play too, because if these guys are doing so well at Buck with Zena and then Brad, they probably have to move Jackson back over to Buck, to Jack, I would think. So I don't know. They've got really good first world problems going on at this position.
Well, I think a wave of talent just coming at you. Right? Offensive line is not going to get a break. Whoever
I was going to say, dude, tackles are you're playing 85 plays, dude.
Yeah, we're hearing really good things about motor across the entire defensive line, D tackles and edge. And man, when you have waves of those guys coming on, you know, if they hopefully they're not in a ton of close fourth quarter games this year. Obviously, it's going to happen at some point, but they should have the edge in the fourth quarter against pretty much everybody they play.
Yeah, and then Jackson over to Jack. That always seemed like a natural position for me too, because he's a big dog.
Well, I don't know that he's back over to Jack yet. I need to get confirmation on that, but I did hear Justice Terry was at D tackle, and so the reason I think that Justice Terry was at, or that Jackson was at Buck, was because Terry was at Jack, and you know you can't have 10 stars sitting there kind of fighting over the same scraps. So it just makes sense. Lance Jackson is the natural, if ever there was a Jack, he's the ideal Jack, the Vitruvian Jack, and so eventually he's going to get there. He might as well be there now and then learn behind Burke and Vosick.
Yeah, his name's Jackson. All right, defensive tackle. So this is the coolest note for me is Hero Kanu. For whatever reason, didn't think he was going to shine like this, and he is so far. So that's been a great development so far. So Travis Shaw and Kanu are still standing out. Hero knows how to win. Okay, great. And Sark rates very highly for a player doing what he's supposed to do and being assignment sound. So we're hearing really good stuff about that defensive tackle room.
Yeah, you know, so Sark really likes the players that do things by the book the right way, follow, you know, program guys. He does. You're going to get a bump if it's even, but you're the better program guy, you're going to start. And that's not to say there's any bad program guys at the position. I've been shocked to learn the football character of all those D tackles they brought in, including the high school kids. It's they've got – you never hear about this many D tackles being program guys. But yeah, we got the proverbial Hero Canoe's the guy that you can let, you know, date your daughter sort of stuff. So he's doing everything. Now I love that kid's high school tape. Texas was on that kid and, you know, couldn't get him. So I was surprised to learn that it was taking him a while to hit the field and make an impact at Ohio State. Obviously they had tremendous depth last year and talent. So that makes sense. Sure. But then he was kind of got the reputation for more of a grinder and you know, kind of doing the dirty work. And that wasn't really what I was expecting based on his high school tape. So now I think he's running into form, probably a bit better of a player than we expected when they got him. But clearly kicking ass in the gym. And like I said, really, really good program guy. And then Shaw lost a lot of weight. So that tells you exactly how motivated he is in his contract year. If that guy's motivated, he was a five-star for a reason. Five-stars don't always pan out, or sometimes they pan out later. And so, you know, Travis Shaw seems like he's right on time for, you know, thanks North Carolina for getting him to this point. We'll take it from here.
Well, and Baker, during the availabilities, he was talking with Shaw that basically Shaw wanted to play zero technique, right? He wanted to be that nose space eater. And Baker was like, look, we aren't doing that. Like, you got to learn to play one and three and all of these things.
I think that was Brevard. I think that was
Brevard. Was it Brevard?
Yeah, that was Brevard. Because Shaw does have that athleticism to play. Three. Basically, Shaw is interchangeable with how they used Tavondre Sweat is basically what fans need to know. But Brevard was kind of in his comfort zone at zero tech and, you know, just used to taking on two guys at a time. But they're trying to get him out of his comfort zone. I think Brevard, right now, I mean – it might be Shaw and Kanu. I might have had my projection all jacked up, but
yeah, I might have been opposite of what I thought was going to happen. Yeah, but that's important. So the point with Baker is that look, you got to be able to be flexible and move,
right?
Yeah. And you got to get to the NFL doing that. So these guys, and they have this like even more intense focus on the NFL. Like, remember from all the media availabilities, they're all like, "We're setting you up for the NFL. Like, you need to do this in the NFL." So the development here is crazy.
That's kind of why we've had trouble the last few years. Hey, you know, before I write an article on the D tackles, I'm like, hey, who knows who's D tackle? What's going on here, Ian? And he's like, man, I don't know. They just both play. They both play everything. So, yeah, they want guys that are versatile, and that's going to help them. That's going to help their NFL draft grade. But I think if Brevard embraces that, he's going to make more plays than he has in the past. And I think there's some explosiveness on his tape. He uses his arms well. He's massive, and he's moving pretty good. They've got that D tackle room is going to be good this year. I we had concerns when they lost who they lost, Alfred and Vernon and Norton and Lole.
Yeah,
but this room's going to be better than it was last year.
I agree.
Cool. And also with Zero Tech, man, like, look, you're the guy taking on double teams, like Eric says. You're making plays for other people. They're getting right. Your tackles. I mean, I'd be like, yeah, put me at one, put me at three, because I'm going to be on the stat sheet now. When you're a Zero Tech, you basically don't exist in as far as traditional stats. You're making everybody else's stats look
good. Right. So
the best example of that would be Casey Hampton, who would dominate for the Steelers and get like 30 tackles a year.
Yeah. But Canu, it's interesting because in his profile, his first time playing organized football from the Texas page was in spring of 2021, and he moved to California October of 2020, and he's from Germany.
Yeah.
And also, whenever they said he's a rule follower, he's efficient, he plays by the rules. That's the German mindset, dude. Like, you got to – like, that's – so that all made sense from their culture. They're very much by the book here in ABC. Yeah,
I didn't even think about that, but you're exactly right.
Yeah. So it's like, to me, I think it's a cultural thing where they're like, you need to be in the A-gap? And he's like, yes, sir, I'll be in
the A-gap. Yes, sir, I'll do it.
Yeah. So they understand the larger machine occurring in their piece in it. So that's really cool. And then Justice Terry at D-tackle, man. Figuring him out at end and a base, just anything you can do to get a special player on the field.
Yep.
A lot of cross-training just across the defense we're seeing at star and secondary and D-line. DT has some crossover. It's pretty crazy.
Lots of versatility, lots of bodies, lots of talent. I mean, it's the more talented you are, you tend to be more versatile too. And so they have so many talented guys, and that's going to lend itself to versatility.
Where, I mean, when we're talking pure team talent position, you know, first on the depth chart to third, where are we at in the pantheon of Texas teams? Like, pure depth under Sark seems different, even than the national championship. Like, it's like just top to bottom, there's NFL guys everywhere. There's young guys that we know in 3 years are going to be high draft picks. Where are we at talent wise?
That's a good one. A good ranking.
Well, I think the program's is as talented as I've ever seen it. You know, I've been following Texas football since like 93. Obviously, 2005 was different from others. 2004 was really talented as well. 2008, really talented. Now, I don't think it's hyperbole. It's backed up by they've led the nation in the last two drafts. That's an indicator. And the recruiting classes are only getting more talented. This is the first time they had the number one class. They're already putting in, look at how many guys that he put in the NFL that he didn't even recruit that were on, decent classes, not great classes. I don't think it's hyperbole. And you can look at some of these positions and he's like, well, this guy's more talented than the starter. You know, if you say just naturally talented, that doesn't mean he's a better player right now, but he's got more upside. And you can see that at a number of positions, right now. I mean, Cade Phillips might be the most talented corner in the program. He's not going to – we don't even know how much he's going to play this year.
Right.
Yeah. We're in this weird successful spot where it's like, how – we have too many NFL edges. What are we going to do? Like, this is a crazy situation.
Yeah, Jonah Williams is the most talented safety in the program, and how much is he even going to play? So that kind of answers the question of it's just, NFL pipeline at every position pretty much.
Drew Kelsen.
Good one.
Drew, tell us, what do you think, man, on the talents, man? You would know. We're so talented. I'm concerned about depth and who we can keep, especially on defense over the next 2 years. Yeah, man, those Decembers are going to be a lot of fun. Going to be deal signing, baby.
Not Decembers, January, the 5 days after whatever Texas's last game. Hopefully it's after the national championship. And hopefully you guys have a little bit more time to celebrate than, A&M makes the College World Series and they're, the next day they lost their coach and like the highs and lows, but it can go that fast. You can win a national championship the next day, lose a couple guys that hurt your chances for the following year. The good thing about this is, NIL helps. They're going to be competitive with NIL. They're going to keep the guys that they truly have to keep. But also they play these guys in waves and you just kind of have to hold on for that one more year for that player to get that chance that they're okay with, right? They're going to be some frustrated freshmen after this season. That's natural. Play them just enough and let them know, hey, next year's your year. And then hopefully you will see guys that see the big picture. You know, Ryan Wingo never got frustrated. Last year he had, 25 catches, 29 catches, something like that. You know, and there were people in his ear. Well, you know, you should have gone somewhere else. You'd be getting 60 catches. Like, no, I'm in the right place. I just need the right timing too.
Well, it's also, this is not theoretical. Like, if you stay and start for Texas, you're going to go to the league. If you have any, unless you don't have some crazy measurable issue, like, the proof's in the pudding, man. It's not like year one where you're having to sell vision. Like, you're selling reality now.
Right. Yeah. I wrote an article. If you become a multi-year starter at Texas, you're going to get drafted. What Jake Majors was, undrafted free agent. Even Hayden Connor got drafted.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
no, stay the course, man. Stay the course. Not taking my chances going somewhere else.
Right. Don't introduce risk to the equation if you don't have to.
Well, and also, man, team talent, right? Like, you could go start at X school. Now, if you go to one of the top schools, you'll be fine. But go to X lower tier. Guess what? Your team's not as good. You don't get to showcase as much, you know? And it's not a fluke that the good teams, there's a little bit of NFL bias even towards them, right? Those good teams get picked over and extra looked at.
They make each other look better. Right. You know, it's like, you know, if you're a running back at Alabama, look at that offense, Sarkat. He had like three guys in the top five in Heisman. You know, they're all making each other. He had a running back, quarterback, and a wide receiver. The running back is making the quarterback better and the wide receiver. The wide receiver is making the quarterback and the running back better. I mean, it's just, you know.
Well, the NFL's risk averse, right? The GM's not going to get in trouble for taking a player from Georgia, right? Sure. It's like and even if they bust, you can be like, he played in Georgia, you know? So it's like, you even help the NFL scouts with this, make it, you know, 10% easier to sell you. So, It's really interesting. Is Jaden Chapman behind Goosby?
Yes.
Cool. All right.
There's
no more to it. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a big year for Chapman. He's going to have Nick Brooks breathing down his neck. I don't know what to expect from Brooks this year, but the word on Brooks is that he's special. He's going to be an early round draft pick. So Jaden's got to kind of, you know, make the most of his reps this year. And, you know, hopefully we don't see him, because that would mean that there's an injury. Well, hopefully we see Jaden a lot in September. I want to see him play. Really liked him coming out of high school. But, yeah, he's going to have to keep Brooks at bay.
And Eric said earlier, you know, this is all Sark's guys now, minus Taff. So it's like, this is his team he built. And just from watching the clips at practice, and then, of course, Eric was there, this is a big athletic team, man. Like, they look different, and that matters. Second note on LaFau, has a nose for the ball, is great in coverage. He's super smart. So all the fans, listen to these notes, right? There's a reason why LaFau is playing. And then the iron sharpens iron department. Ant Hill is cutting his teeth, covering injuries at times. Interesting.
Yeah. LaFau is really good. Like we said on the inside the program yesterday, we got a late one out there Sunday. Leon LaFau is like having an extra DB out there when they're in zone. Just really smart, uses the eyes very well, where he's supposed to be. Understand, really good route recognition. And he's also a downhill player. He's going to be good. Remember, the staff was as high on that guy like he was a high four-star coming out of high school. Every bit as hard as they were going after Braden Rouse this cycle, that's how much they loved him in that cycle. So, expect big things out of Leonga. I think him and Ant Hill are going to be one of the best duos in the country, and not just because Ant Hill is so awesome, but partly because Ant Hill is very awesome. And, you know, Ant Hill worked a lot on his coverage this year, and having injuries is going to be a little bit different than covering, you know, Gunnar Helm.
Yeah.
Covering NFL tight end every day in practice. Come on, man. You have no choice but to get better.
Well, and this is, you know, this is the piece that, he's already going to be a first rounder, but this is the no-brainer part, right? Yep. We know he's fast. We know he can rush. We know he has crazy athleticism. You can cover well now, and the NFL is going to be super excited. All right. Star again. We hit this. It'll be interesting. It's still interesting if Taff plays that, but this sentence is what was interesting. Whoever the coaches tell the play there will play there. Seems like they're getting a little bit more firm with, hey, yeah, if you want, it's over time. They're just kind of like, hey, man.
All right. Yeah. Just go over there. Just, you're playing it now.
Yeah. Exactly. Coaxing them to the position. So I thought that sentence was really funny.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of team guys on the team. Everybody's a team guy. Culture is the best it's ever been. Every year it's gotten a little bit better. You know, had a couple knuckleheads, three knuckleheads last year. They're all gone. Haven't heard about any knuckleheads right at this point. I think some of that is they got lucky with the guys that they targeted in the portal. But culture's in a good place. Everybody's going to do what they have to. Everybody's scrapping, clawing, trying to get their snaps, man, and they'll get them wherever they can.
Yeah. So more safety notes: McDonald and Taft, then Derek Williams, and Taft goes to start. Yeah. Taft and man hasn't been an issue. He can cover in the slot. He's smart and he's quick.
Yeah, he's a good athlete. You know, he'll run a 4.5, and you know his shuttle is going to be good. He looked pretty proud walking around practice with his new and improved quads. The short phase is not over yet, apparently. And he's, you know, put on a little bit more muscle up top. But one thing, like a lot of these guys, you see they got really big legs and they're kind of leaner up top. So they're just, I can see why they're so explosive, because they're not carrying any more weight than they need to.
Good.
Yeah. Tap going to be like Barron that year you played nickel. Don't throw a bubble screen. He's going to blow it up every single time. Tap is going to be able to diagnose plays so fast. People are in trouble. Like, the little short stuff is not going to work versus him.
Well, also, man, these modern coverages are leverage coverages, just meaning that you're in the position of where the route is coming to, right? So it's not all pure, like, turn and run man stuff, you know? You have the natural leverage advantage. If this guy goes inside, it goes to the inside player. If this guy goes outside, you know? So there's also that factor, too. So that'll be interesting. And if Taft works star and he's having to work with some safety above him, capping him, he knows exactly where that safety is going to be. He knows exactly how to reroute that guy. He knows. So there's also this breadth of knowledge that Taft can make that position even easier on himself by knowing where his help is and all of that. So
he's also going to blow up screens.
Yeah. And he's going to get some picks too, man. You throw a dumb slant. Like, you know, it's like that's the thing too, that I think will be a lot of fun. Cool. And then Roberson, a player that every time he was on special teams, flashed physically, had his mistakes, right? But still looked, like, that's a player, you know? So that's good that he's playing his best. He's been flat out good. Playing with better understanding, getting his hands on the ball. That's going to, to me, is a big thing, because we don't have a ton of turnover guys historically through their stats. So having guys that can make plays on the ball is also going to matter.
Yeah, it's – typically Roberson or Santana Wilson when we hear about a guy making a play on the ball. So, you know, and Wilson's not really in the mix for the top four yet. But, yeah, we've been hearing good things about Roberson since the day he got on campus. He hasn't quite put it together yet. It sounds like it's starting to come together for him. Physical specimen, physical player, good speed, really has all the tools. Cade Phillips is different. But he's one of the most gifted DBs they have for sure.
Definitely.
And when you're seeing holds and stuff like that on special teams, that's a technique thing, man. That can be solved. So the worst thing you can have is he's not athletic enough. And that's not the case with Roberson. So that's going to be important.
It's going to trust your technique when it comes to special teams. It's easy to hold on special teams. It's hard to do the right thing, but it is repetition. You got to do it over and over and over again. Trust yourself.
What do y'all think about those NFL kickoffs that they're doing now? Where everyone's standing still, the ball's got to be delivered, and then you run. Everyone's super close together.
I don't know. I will say that the older I get, the more violent football seems to be getting as well. And that's a lot of the violence happens on kickoffs. And it's just, you know, these guys are running 22, 23 miles an hour, crashing into each other. It's tough to watch at times, but that is a really weird thing to see, kickoffs like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you'll hear like, fans, like, they're changing the game and getting soft. Go do the history of football. People were dying all the time. The whole game has been from 100 years, an effort in PR and not killing people. And so they're figuring it out. I don't know, man. Maybe do something different than a kickoff, because it's not that dynamic or exciting now. Like, everyone's kind of starting at the 35, whatever. It's a weird world. Kobe Black is earning trust by the day. And Malik Muhammad is most consistent.
Yep.
That's tricky, man. You have consistent guy versus talent guy. Not to say Malik Muhammad doesn't have talent. Of course he does. But that's where you get in a tough situation trying to do a depth chart as a coach.
Well, Malik better have to be the most consistent because he's got the most snaps at the position on the team. And you'd expect that. I mean, he kind of came in more ready than most high school players, like Grayson Littleton, who we've compared him to. And Kobe Black is just more – it's just keep getting reps. He's got tons of talent. We hear a lot of good things about his length and athleticism combination. He puts it to work. And he's leaner. He's done a good job making sure he doesn't carry any needless weight. So they have a good – I think they're in a better shape than at cornerback than some fans. I get why they're – the loss of Jadae is definitely real.
For sure.
The loss of ball production is real. But I think they're going to be pretty good, especially because they've got – they're going to have good safeties behind them, which is going to allow them to play a little bit more aggressively. And then there should be a really withering pass rush that they can take advantage of.
You also have a Keena who likes a more aggressive style, that stuff, which is good. And if you look at pictures of Kobe Black now and like clips of him, he looks like a corner there. He was in that weird spot. Like, is he going to be a safe? Don't say the S word. But now he looks like a corner too.
Yeah. Like a lot of these guys, you didn't think they could get leaner. They are lean. They're lean up top and freaking have tree trunks for legs.
They run a lot, dude.
Yeah. Teddy
Roosevelt had to crack down on college football because too many. Yeah, the sport was getting banned on campuses. So it always cracks me up, the football's getting soft thing. It's like, dude, yeah, it got soft in 1903, too.
Dudes had leather helmets, though. It's so different.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like
if Teddy Roosevelt thinks it was too harsh, then it was probably too harsh.
You know? Dude, they had nightmare PR from like day one, and they had to get rid of the flying wedge, right? And because it was hurting people. And if you think of a kickoff structure, it moves like a flying wedge. And so that's what's interesting. You have people running in front of the ball carrier like that. So it's interesting. Let's see. Does Kobe Black have the necessary speed? He didn't look fast enough to play corner at this level in his high school tape to me.
You know, I thought his senior tape, he started looking a little safety-ish to me as well. But we're not hearing any issues now. And like I said, he's leaned up. A year in strength and conditioning at Texas is gonna make you faster than you were in high school. So I haven't heard any concerns about him. They speed's not an issue with him. Now he's not going to be as fast as others, but he's faster than Ryan Watts. I'll tell you that.
Hey, look, though, I think Andrew Armstrong ran like a high 4.3, right, in the combine or something. He ran step for step with him versus Arkansas. He didn't have any speed issues then.
Armstrong's a good receiver too. Hey, Eric. Some reporters have said that if Ark struggles, then they will bench him. But I totally disagree. If Ark had the same grace as you were, then he'll be fine.
What? Oh, man, I haven't heard
anything. It's probably ESPN's
take. I don't know.
The difference, man, is Quinn had Ark behind him and didn't get benched. Ark doesn't have Ark behind him. So the likelihood of benching is even less, unless it's one of those like performative, you got benched versus San Jose State. But like, there's not the depth behind Ark to go to the bench as well.
True. Yeah. I also don't think he's going to struggle.
Neither do I. Dude, watching the national media, you know, there's the concept of being molded by the crowd, right? Where they say that like politicians, media influencers, the fans' chats and comments end up. It's so strange watching these people that know that Ark is going to be good, but they won't say it because the audience is
afraid.
It's so weird. And then they'll turn around and do an eval of just, not a no-name quarterback, but not an Arch Manning name quarterback, and they can give you a totally clear read. It's very strange what's happening with those, like, media personalities. It's like, dude, just say your actual opinion. It's weird.
Yeah. If Texas was going to start this guy as a true freshman, I would get some of the conversations. But we've seen him. Not only have we seen him, it's not the greatest competition, but we've got 3 years of information behind the scenes on this guy. And we had, 3 years of information behind the scenes on him when he was in high school. The guy is legit. He's the best prospect I've ever covered.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. And the tape is there and it's good. And so people are being very weird about him. Like, people will either go ultra. And then you hear the guys that are like, I think he's going to be really good. And they get called homers. It's like, no, their eval is right. Everyone else doing the weird contrarian thing are the ones that are going against the logic of this.
Got your Steve Spurriers of the world coming out. I don't think he's that great. Okay, Steve.
So weird.
Yeah, he's pretty much a can't miss to me. Now, of course, he's gonna have a bad throw or two. But
No, he's not.
We had people critiquing his throws in the small window that you guys recorded the other day. Like, he was late with the ball. It's like, oh my gosh, yeah. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, I saw him. He had one bad throw out of about the 30. I saw him.
He threw that one in ULM. Like he did, and Quinn did the exact same thing where he just rolled out right, said YOLO, threw it right to the guy. It was the same play as Quinn, yeah. And you know, and then Quinn went on to take care of the ball really well that year.
He's watching tape. He watched Quinn's tape.
Yeah, I thought he was a tiny bit overrated as a junior, but his senior film won me over. What the best part? I've yet to see this. If you watch Arch's huddle, that's what coaches want to see. They showed him throwing quick in-breakers. It wasn't like he made the wrong read and threw a 40-yard pass, which you see on huddle all the time. It was every level of throw. Here's Arch throwing a screen. Here's him throwing short. And I was like, oh, this is when a quarterback family knows what a quarterback actually needs to do. So his highlights were showing it was an actual job interview. And most of the times, like I said, you see the quarterback make the wrong read and still complete, and everyone thinks he's great. Yeah, it would be different if Arch didn't have game tape. That's what's weird is people are acting like that didn't happen or they're minimizing. Film guy had a great breakdown of Arch.
He did
that on the board. He does a good job.
It's okay to say DJ Lagway is going to be awesome, but how dare you say the same about Arch?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Or they'll say I've seen them do matchups of us versus Ohio State and go off on Arch's lack of experience, not mention Julian Sain's lack of experience at all. It's super weird, man. They'll be wrong, but it's just strange now.
Does Arch have elite arm strength, or is it good to average for a quarterback his size? Now, I think the jump he made between junior year, and I loved him as a junior, it's his senior year in high school, was arm strength. And I think I think his arm has only gotten stronger. You know, he played a lot of basketball. He wasn't lifting weights as much as he is now. He's a unit. He's a big kid.
There's a picture of him looking like shredded up. It was weird. Yeah,
his lower body is a lot bigger than it once was. His arm strength is good. I think it's perfectly fine for what it's stronger than Peyton's, you know. I think it's
that's what I'd say. It's good. If we're talking pure elite arm strength, no, but it's good arm strength and it's everything else. And we kind of have this weird like arm strength bias. There's plenty of arm strength quarterbacks that
Jamarcus Russell
suck, you know. So you really want to know, is he throwing the right ball for the right situation?
Well, he's got a lightning release for having a being a longer guy. You know, it's typically the longer the levers, probably a lot of times the longer the release. He's got a lightning release. He plays really good anticipation and accuracy. And he's got a natural feel for the deep ball. So, you know, I watched him throw and, you know, deep outs. Hell, you know, how strong is Quinn Ewers' arm? Wow, it's an effortless throwing motion, but we never really saw him drive the football, right? He can hit those deep outs every bit. Maybe not as well as Quinn, because Quinn was just a lead in that regard. But he's got the arm for all of it. I'm not worried about – I don't really have any concerns about him. I don't even know what to be concerned about. He's one of the toughest guys on the team. He's one of the hardest working guys in the gym that Beckton's always saying, hey, how come the quarterback's stronger than you, that sort of thing. He's a total leader of the entire locker room. He's not just insulated with the offensive linemen like a lot of quarterbacks. He's a man of the people. Like I said, go look at that picture of him with Wingo in St. Louis. You know, I'm sure he's probably in church the next morning with, you know, Connor Stroh. Who knows? Just a total man of the people, and he's a hard worker, and he's tough, and he's got all the skill set that goes with a Manning, including his grandfather's athleticism.
What
game was that? The bootleg. He rolled to the left, but then kind of didn't even get turned around or squared away, and he still was able to launch the ball down the sideline to Wingo, I want to say. Talk about arm strength. Like, it takes enough arm strength to get the ball down there off platform like that.
That was one of the plays against Mississippi State, I think.
Well, and y'all know, too, I'm critical, right? And I'm critical of the quarterbacks. If I think there's big holes in your game, I'm gonna say it. So if I study Arch. I'm looking for the edge, right? The unique piece of information to deliver. He's a good player, guys. He just is. All right. That was fun, man. We're talking team news, man. We're going to keep talking team news for the next
off-season.
6 months. So awesome. Any final things, guys?
Nope. Oh, yeah. I think I'm trying to run that play back through my head. I remember the play that won the Wingo. Yeah. Plenty of arm strength. No, I'm good. I've got to go get back to work. Got to get some notes.
You know what you guys should do? You guys should sign up for Inside Texas, because as soon as Eric gets back to work, guess what? It's going to be on the board. So you're going to get a lot of good information, guys. Only $1 for the week right now. So you can get Inside Texas for $1 first week as a bonus. Your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. Always bring in value, guys. Get Paul's book by Thinking Texas Football today. All the links are in the description. If you don't have it by now, shame on you guys. Chat, y'all been awesome today. I'm really excited that we're getting back into the swing of things. Football season is wonderful. Y'all have a wonderful day. This was IT Live. It was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Peace.